KRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Palestinian resistance groups vow Israel will pay a heavy price for its crimes. Also in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces launch a fresh raid on the flashpoint city of Nablus. And Imran Khan is arrested during a court appearance in Islamabad. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisu Mishahmadi and these are our top stories this hour. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip hold a funeral for victims of Israel's aerial strikes that claimed the lives of 13 Palestinians. Mourners condemn the Israeli regime's air raids while carrying the bodies of the victims in Gaza. Three senior members of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement, as well as 10 others, including their family members, have been killed. Gaza medics say 4 children are among the killed. 20 people have been injured, some of them seriously. The regime claims that it has targeted Islamic Jihad leaders and the group's weapons manufacturing sites. 40 aircraft and drones were involved in the attacks. The Gaza deaths bring to over 120 the number of Palestinians killed so far this year. The Israeli regime has warned settlers living near Gaza to stay close to bomb shelters in the coming hours over concerns about retaliatory rocket attacks from the besieged Gaza Strip. The Israeli army has ordered the closure of schools, beaches, and highways in cities and towns in southern Israel and limited public gatherings. Israel's military affairs minister says the regime should be prepared for a prolonged campaign and widening ranges of fire. The regime has imposed a total lockdown on Gaza, which has been blockaded for years. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement has vowed to avenge the death of 3 of its senior members in Israel's pre-dawn strikes on Gaza. Spokesman Tariq Salimi says the bombardment will be met by a bombardment and the attack will be met by attack, Dawood Shahab. Another Islamic Jihad spokesman warned that the resistance now considers all Israeli cities and settlements as legitimate targets. Hamas chief Ismail Haniyeh also vowed that the regime will pay the price for the attack. He said the assassination of resistance leaders will not bring security to the regime. It will instead bring more acts of resistance by Palestinians. Hamas spokesman Hassan Qasim also warned the Israeli regime over its latest atrocity in the Gaza Strip.
The Israeli occupation committed a great crime and treacherous aggression against our people in the Gaza Strip by bombing residential areas and homes, which led to the killing of children and women and targeted the leaders of the resistance. Our people and the resistance know how to respond to this great crime and make the occupation pay the price for this aggression on the Gaza Strip.
The Palestinian resistance group Lion's Den has also warned Tel Aviv of surprise and unprecedented retaliatory attacks. The group warned that time is running out and the gates of hell will open up to the regime in the West Bank. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Foreign Ministry has called for international mediation to stop the Israeli strikes on Gaza. The Joint Command of Resistance Groups, an umbrella group comprising Palestinian armed factions in Gaza, also said the regime should be prepared to pay the price for the attack. We talked to journalist and activist Khalid Barakat about Israel's fresh deadly strikes on the Gaza Strip. He said the regime is seeking to turn attention from its own crisis at the expense of Palestinian people's lives.
This heinous Israeli crime it comes in a time where the Israeli government is in crisis. They're trying to solve their crisis at the expense of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian resistance. And for the past 3 weeks, at least, we have been the warning that Israel is going to carry assassination against Palestinian leaders, especially in Gaza. The Palestinian resistance have said repeatedly that this is what Israel is planning to do. And in fact, we have even spoken about this in this show, and that is, you know, the Palestinian resistance are aware that Israel was plotting to assassinate Palestinian resistance. And this crime comes in a time where the Palestinian people are just about a week from commemorating 75 years of the continuing Nakba, the catastrophe of 75 years of exile and expulsion and dispossession.
Condemnations are pouring in over the recent pre-dawn strikes by the Israeli regime that killed more than a dozen people. Regional countries declaring solidarity with grieving Palestinians. Iran's foreign ministry says the attacks show the regime's weakness in the face of growing resistance of Palestinian youth. It stressed the Israeli regime needs to be held accountable and pay the price for the bloodshed. Syria also offered condolences, vowing Damascus will continue to support the Palestinian people and their cause. It called for action to put an end to the Israeli bloodshed. In Lebanon, Hezbollah stressed that the martyrdom of resistance commanders will only make the nation more determined to continue on the path of the resistance. Hezbollah called the cowardice massacre of innocent women and children a crime against humanity. Also, the Jordanian foreign ministry urged the international community to prevent the Israeli regime from committing such heinous crimes. Meanwhile, Israeli forces keep intensifying their crackdown against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. At least a dozen people, including a teenager, have suffered bullet wounds during an Israeli raid on the flashpoint city of Nablus. The raid also left over 100 others injured by gas inhalation. The regime troopers stormed a residential area to arrest Palestinians for their alleged role in an anti-Israeli operation. They shelled their house and opened fire at residents protesting against the raid. Two Palestinians were also detained. Israel has stepped up its attacks on occupied Palestinian towns and cities in recent months. Over 100 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces in the West Bank so far this year. Iran says the U.S. dealt a deadly blow to the international rule of law with its exit from the 2015 deal. It also is known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. The deputy foreign minister made these comments in a tweet to mark the fifth year of the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA and its imposition of unilateral sanctions on Iran. Ali Bagharikani underlined the effective removal of sanctions remains key to the full implementation of the agreement. Bagharikani added that this will be possible through the political will of the U.S. and European violators of the deal to finalize the negotiations on its revival. But he warned that the window of opportunity in this regard will not remain open permanently. The issue of sanctions and Iran's remedial measures in response to the U.S. pullout remain the main sticking point in the talks. World Red Cross Day is observed every year on May 8th. The number of parents of the members of Mujahideen organization have taken the opportunity to attract attentions to the fact that they have not been able to visit their loved ones for a very long time. They held a sit-in in front of the ICRC office in Tehran, demanding the International Committee of the Red Cross to step in.
Demanding a simple right every parent should freely enjoy, to visit their children. Fathers and mothers, brothers and sisters, these are the relatives of some of the Mujahideen Khalq organization members who are currently in the MKO camp in Tirana, Albania. Many of them have not seen their loved ones in decades, and they are calling on the International Committee of the Red Cross to live up to its humanitarian mission and arrange a meeting for them. Head of the Najat Society, an NGO that provides assistance to families who have been separated from their loved ones by the MKO terror group, was allowed to go inside the ICRC office in Tehran, where these parents had gathered on World Red Cross Day to push for a meeting with their loved ones.
They are demanding that the Red Cross would use all its capacity, trying to force Albanian government and other international bodies to try to make some connection between these people and the people inside the camps. Some of them haven't heard about their loved ones for more than 40 years now. We just want a simple call or letter or being able to visit their loved ones. That's all. And to learn that if they are safe and sound.
In an attempt to have members devote themselves to the group, the MKO has resorted to inhumane practices, including forced divorces, separation of children from their parents, and restricting family ties. This, along with some other rules and regulations, is the reason why the group is considered a cult of personality.
The least the ICRC can do is to arrange for us to meet our loved ones who are trapped in the MKO camp in Tirana. In support of the MKO, Albania won't even give us a visa, let alone going to the camp.
My brother was a prisoner of war. I have pictures proving that he never wanted to be a member of this terror group. He was deceived into joining the group. They told him that they would get him out of Saddam's prison and take him to Europe. Now he's trapped inside their camp and we're not allowed to see him.
We are not allowed to meet our children. Where are all these human rights organizations? Don't they see how the MKO has deprived us from our basic rights? Where are you? Can't you hear our voice? You allow this group to hold meetings and gatherings in European countries every year, but you have never allowed us to go and meet our children. We have heard that Paris will once again host their meeting, but we haven't seen our children for decades.
The group has been described as being involved in terrorist activities by the United Nations Committee Against Torture in 2008. Reports say that Paris will be hosting this terrorist group's next annual meeting in June, but the parents of its members are still longing for a simple visit.
The MKO has the blood of 17,000 Iranians on its hands. It is considered a terrorist organization, yet it is receiving support from Western countries. All these parents are asking for is to meet their loved ones. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The Pakistan, now former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan, has been arrested in a move that threatens fresh political turmoil in the country. Khan was detained by the National Accountability Bureau in connection with a corruption case. Scores of security personnel in riot gear took him away in a van from the Islamabad High Court, where he had gone to seek bail in multiple cases registered against him. In a tweet posted just hours before his arrest, Khan claimed that attempts to detain him aimed to prevent him from campaigning ahead of this year's general elections. He said the move is an attempt to stop him from mobilizing people in case the Supreme Court violates the Constitution regarding the holding of elections. Meantime, thousands of Khan's supporters have taken to the streets across the country. Clashes erupted as police fired tear gas and water cannons to disperse protesters in Karachi and Lahore. The ralliers also blocked roads in the capital Islamabad and neighboring Rawalpindi and Peshawar. In the meantime, the Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf party has called for nationwide protests. Khan is the chairman of this party. He was removed from power in April last year after he lost a parliamentary vote of confidence. Khan is accused of a host of charges ranging from terrorism to corruption, which he says are all politically motivated and false. That is it for TatMove. China has expelled a diplomat from Canada's consulate in Shanghai after Ottawa canceled and asked the Chinese diplomat to leave the country.
Countermeasure in reaction to Canada's unscrupulous move, China decides to declare the Consul of the Consulate General of Canada in Shanghai persona non grata, who has been asked to leave China before May 13th.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman also said that Beijing reserves the right to respond further to Ottawa's unreasonable actions. He added that China's move is to safeguard its legitimate rights and interests. On Monday, Canada announced the expulsion of a diplomat from the Chinese consulate in Toronto for allegedly interfering in the country's internal affairs. Beijing has rejected the accusation, saying it has no interest in doing so. Diplomatic tensions between the two countries have been running high since the detention of a top executive of the Chinese firm Huawei in 2018. Beijing's subsequent arrest of two Canadians on spying charges, all three were freed in 2021. The World Health Organization says nearly a month of armed conflict in Sudan has also left 604 people dead. The UN Health Agency says fighting in the North African country has also injured thousands of others. The figure provides a clearer snapshot of the scale of the crisis. The International Organization of Migration says 700,000 people have been internally displaced, and half of these over the past week. This comes as Saudi sources said 3 days of ongoing talks in Jeddah between delegations of the warring sides have made no significant progress. The source said a permanent ceasefire is not on the table. Clashes erupted between Sudan's army and a paramilitary group in mid-April over the latter's proposed integration into the regular armed forces. Russia's President Vladimir Putin says the world is at a turning point, saying the West seeks to destroy his country.
Today, civilization is again at a decisive turning point. A real war has been unleashed against our motherland, but we have fought back against international terrorism. We will also protect the people of Donbas and ensure our own security.
The Russian president also accused the West of sowing hatred and Russophobia. He further blasted the Ukrainian government for taking people hostage to West ambition. Putin was addressing thousands of Russian army personnel and the leaders of ex-Soviet allies during a parade marking Victory Day in Moscow. Troops and military hardware, including tanks and missile launchers, marched in front of Putin. May 9th marks the anniversary of the Soviet Union's victory over Nazi Germany in World War II. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
WHO's Director General has recently said the COVID-19 pandemic has been on a downward trend, but the risk of new variants remain. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Nature wrote in this regard, the World Health Organization, WHO, announced recently that COVID-19 is no longer a public health emergency of international concern, or PHEIC. WHO's Director General Tedros Adhanom made the decision following a recommendation by the organization's COVID-19 Emergency Committee. During a meeting, the committee highlighted the decreasing trend in death and hospitalizations and the high levels of population immunity against SARS-CoV-2 as reasons for ending the PHEIC. During a press conference the following day, Tedros emphasized that COVID-19 remains a global health threat and said that the new status doesn't mean that countries should let down their guard. It's time for countries to transition from emergency mode to managing COVID-19 alongside other infectious diseases, he said. The announcement didn't come as a surprise. After the emergency committee's last meeting in late January, Tedros acknowledged that the pandemic was probably at a transition point. This is not a snap decision. It is a decision that has been considered carefully for some time, planned for, and made on the basis of a careful analysis of the data, he said during the press conference. A PHEIC defined by the WHO as an extraordinary event that constitutes a public health risk to other countries through the international spread of disease is the highest level of international public health alarm. The COVID-19 PHEIC was declared on January 30, 2020. In practice, this decision compelled countries to start reporting cases to the WHO to create worldwide surveillance. Importantly, it's signaling to all countries that they need to prepare for it, says epidemiologist Salim Abdul Karim, the director of the Center for the AIDS Program of Research in South Africa in Durban. In the 3 years, 3 months, and 5 days that have passed since the PHEIC was first established, countries reported 7 million deaths to the WHO. Estimates from the WHO and others as to the pandemic's true death toll are 2 to 3 times higher. There are no hard and fast rules to determine when a PHEIC is over, says Karim. Adding, we are still very much in a pandemic. We are just in a different stage in which we are no longer seeing large numbers of deaths and pressure on hospitals, he added. For Karim, the end of PHEIC is a recognition that SARS-CoV-2 will be around for a long time. But although he says the decision was pragmatic and reasonable, he worries that it will mean in terms of resources and availability of diagnostic tests, vaccination, and treatment. Epidemiologist Jennifer Nuzzo, the director of the Pandemic Center at the Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, says it is unclear whether this decision will have much practical impact, given that many countries have already been relaxing their measures to combat COVID-19. Nuzzo says political attention to the pandemic was lost long before the decision, unfortunately. Even while COVID remains a top cause of death, governments have decided to put their energies elsewhere. Nuzzo says it's important to distinguish between the end of the PHEIC and the decision by individual countries to end their public health emergencies. The United States, for example, announced that its COVID-19 health emergency will end on May 11th. That means U.S. residents will lose access to free COVID-19 testing, vaccines, and treatment. Karim says, so it will worsen the inequity in the access to diagnostics, treatments, and then that's my concern. In his statement, Tedros said he also decided to establish a review committee to develop long-term recommendations for countries on how to manage COVID-19 going forward. The WHO published an updated version of their strategic preparedness and response plan for COVID-19, outlining actions that countries should take in the next 2 years. Nuzzo says what is most urgent now is to make sure that countries don't turn back on trying to learn the lessons of COVID and bolster their preparedness for future pandemics. In the meantime, according to Science, Greg Gonzalez, a public health expert at the Yale School of Public Health, says he's less concerned about what to call the pandemic than what is done to address it. Regardless of whether it is called a PHEIC, COVID-19 continues to cause death and suffering across the globe, he says, adding, yet almost everywhere we've declared mission accomplished and we have no appetite for doing anything more to fight this disease. Gonzalez says we are willing to bake in a huge amount of morbidity and mortality to get back to normal, and it doesn't bode well for facing our future.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss.
صلِّ على محمد وآل محمد. وافعل بي ما أنت أهله. وصلى الله على رسوله والأئمة الميامين من أعلاه، وسلم تسليما كثيرا. وصل اللهم على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing the last part of this divine Kumail supplication. Ya sabigh an-ni'am, ya dafi' an-niqam, ya nur al-mustawhishin fi al-dhulam. O fountain of the blessings, O repeller of the adversities, O light of those who are lonely in darkness, ya aliman la yu'allam, O the knower who was never taught. Salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Bless Muhammad and his progeny. Waf'al bima anta ahlu. Do with me what is worthy of you. Wa sallallahu ala rasulihi wal a'immatil mayamin min alihi wa sallama tasliman kathira. And Allah bless his messenger and holy imams of his progeny and give them abundant peace. So regarding this part of the Kumail supplication, we said that as the traditions in Islamic religion suggest, Allah's names are equal with an infallible imam or perfect human being. And by resorting to these perfect individuals, the human beings can get perfection and prosperity. They can be saved from practical vices. And a perfect human is, in reality, Allah's exalted name that is the center of the world, and that is the Imam Hujjat ibn al-Hasan, our 12th Imam. May Allah hasten his advent. It has been narrated that Prophet Jesus, ala nabina wa alihi wa alayhi salam, had many sheep. A group of angels thought that his love for the Almighty Allah is related to this love for his wealth. So, for making them aware of the truth, the Almighty sent Gabriel to go on top of a hill and call, glorious and holy is the Lord of the angels and the Spirit. Hearing this, Jesus got restless and ran to the top of the hill in search of the caller, but found no one. So he said, "Oh, the nice caller, if you utter the name of my beloved once more, I will grant you half of my sheep." Gabriel called Allah's name once again. And Prophet Jesus was eagerly impatient, and when he returned to his normal state, he cried out, "Call Allah's name once more so that I would give you all my sheep." Gabriel did so again, and then Jesus cried and said, "I have nothing left to sacrifice for his name, so come and take my life for it." This is the importance of the names of the Almighty Allah. Ya man ismuhu dawa'un wa dhikruhu shifa'. Oh, whose name is remedy, whose remembrance is cure. And some of these names were mentioned in this last part. Ya sabigh an-ni'am. Oh, the fountain of the blessings. Ya dafi' an-niqam. O repeller of the adversities. Ya nur al-mustawhishin fi al-dhulam. O light of those who are lonely in darkness.
Readily please forgive one who owes nothing but supplications to you. You do what you will. Oh, he whose name is the remedy and whose remembrance is a sure cure for all ailments, and obedience to whom makes one self-sufficient. Have mercy on one whose only asset is hope, and whose only armor is weeping. Oh, he who perfected all bounties, and who was off all misfortune. Light who illuminates those who are in darkness. Omniscient who knows without learning. Bless Muhammad and the progeny of Muhammad, and do unto me in accordance with that which befits you.
Thank you, Allah.
Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
In Islamic sources, the relation between prayer and the response has been referred to by the assertion that prayer is the key to the response. In this part of the supplication, we read, اغفر لمن لا يملك إلا الدعاء. O Allah, you are the one that has to forgive me that I have nothing, I am the one who has nothing but supplication. This statement denotes the kind of relation between prayer and response. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, supplication is the key of mercy. In his will to his son, Imam Hassan alayhi salam, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib says, thereafter, he put the keys of his treasuries in your hand in that he has allowed you to ask him from it. So, whenever you wished, you opened the doors of his treasuries through supplication. The phrase, so whenever you wished, you opened the doors of his treasuries through supplication, has a clear indication to the kind of relation which exists between prayer and the response, and the fact that prayer is the key of mercy. Therefore, supplication is the key by which we unlock the treasuries of Allah's mercy. The treasuries of Allah's mercy have no end, but not everyone possesses the keys to these treasuries. Not everyone is able and capable of opening these treasuries of His mercy. The verse of the Holy Quran says, whatever mercy Allah unfolds for people, no one can withhold it. With reference to this verse, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said, the mercy implies the prayer and dua. In other words, supplication is the very key by which Allah opens the doors of His mercy for the people, and which He has placed in their hands. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode as well. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Yeah, Allah, yeah, Allah, don't let me go astray, 'cause I need by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
In the limelight.
The British Bureau of Statistics announced a significant increase in the unemployment rate, which shows the first effects of the economic recession following the energy crisis and the sharp increase in the cost of living in Britain. Unemployment in the United Kingdom has risen dramatically, and the government is now looking for new sources of income and spending that can curb this trend. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Website of Sky News has covered this story and tells us more. The official figures showed the UK unemployment rate has edged up unexpectedly, highlighting a faster-than-expected spike in wage rises in the face of skyrocketing inflation across the country. According to the figures presented by the Office for National Statistics, ONS, on Tuesday, Britain's job vacancies have fallen for the ninth straight month in a sign that the uncertain economic outlook is heavily impacting the British job market. The data revealed that the unemployment rate also rose to 3.8% in the 3 months to February, the highest level since the second quarter of 2022, while vacancies fell by another 47,000 in the first 3 months of 2023. The increase in the unemployment rate appeared as a surprise for the government, as most economists had expected the rate to remain unchanged. The Office for National Statistics, ONS, said firms continue to cite economic pressure as a factor in holding back on recruitment, as they can't afford employees' wages. Meanwhile, total pay, including bonuses, grew at an annual rate of 5.9% in the 3 months to February. According to the Office for National Statistics, ONS, regular pay, excluding bonuses, also continued to rise by 6.6%, but down by 3.4% with Consumer Prices Index inflation taken into account. The Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee is watching wage growth carefully for signs that inflation is remaining stubborn and may consider raising interest rates once again in May in the light of recent figures. Martin Beck, the chief economist advisor at EY Item Club, said, given the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee's wariness around inflation's persistence, February's strong rise in private sector regular pay could easily shift the majority in a more hawkish direction. Ellie Henderson at Investec Economics added, we think that on balance, the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of England will raise the bank rate by 25 basis points to 4.5%, but that will be the last hike in this tightening cycle. Eddie Henderson added, today's data release arguably supports that call. The labour market is still tight, suggesting a further tightening of the screws. The economic pressure and the cost of living crisis have prompted many workers across different industries to hold industrial action now and then, causing disruption in services in different sectors such as Royal Mail, British Rail, National Health Service, the NHS. Junior doctors are the latest group to strike, seeking a 35% pay rise to compensate for below-inflation pay rises over more than a decade. According to the Office for National Statistics, ONS, discontent over pay in the public sector saw 348,000 working days lost to strikes in February, up from 210,000 in January. It has been worried that pay growth to match inflation only raises the already surging prices. A cost of living crisis driven by sharp food and energy price increases has left the British people struggling to pay their bills. The Conservative government argues that pay increases would increase inflation, which currently stands at 10.4%. The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered this story and tells us more. The fallout from the wave of strikes was underlined on Tuesday, 18th of April, with figures showing nearly 350,000 working days were lost in February. The number of days lost due to industrial action was up to 348,000 from 210,000 the previous months, with almost three-fifths down to the education sector. The number of stoppages hit 654, the highest ever recorded by the Office for National Statistics, with 250,000 workers involved. Just under 1.4 million days have been eradicated since December, a month when the level reached 826,000. Strikes have been taking place across the National Health Service, Education, the Civil Service and Rail, as workers demanded higher pay amid the cost of living crisis. The Office for National Statistics data show that the highest number of stoppages in a previous month was 530 back in 1970. The figure appears to have been pushed up because school strikes are counted as separate disputes between staff and their direct employer, which can be academies or the local authority. The stark numbers were revealed in statistics showing the jobs market defying the economic slowdown, but real-term wages are still tumbling and long-term sickness has hit a new record. Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, claimed unemployment is still close to historic lows despite official figures showing the rate nudging up from 3.7% to 3.8% in the 3 months to February. Pay continues to be outstripped by surging inflation, with total wages, including bonuses, up 5.9%, but down by 4.1% when headline Consumer Prices Index CPI is taken into account. Worryingly for the Bank of England, which is trying to keep a lid on prices, regular private sector wages were increasing faster than expected at 6.9%. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. The real value of UK workers' pay continued to fall at the fastest rate for more than a decade, as wage increases in February were outstripped by high inflation. The Office for National Statistics, ONS, said annual growth in average pay, excluding bonuses, held steady at 6.6% in the 3 months to February, despite a small rise in unemployment and decline in the number of job vacancies. Fueled by bumper pay for bankers and accountants in the City of London, wage growth, including bonuses, rose by 5.9%. Economists had forecast weaker rates of pay growth in a potential dilemma for the Bank of England as it considers whether to raise interest rates for a 12th consecutive time in May. However, the Office for National Statistics said total pay fell by 4.1% on the year, after taking inflation into account, among the largest falls since 2009. Reflecting softer conditions in the jobs market as Britain's economy struggles for growth momentum, the unemployment rate unexpectedly rose to 3.8%. The number of job vacancies also fell for the ninth consecutive month, although remained high at more than 1.1 million as companies struggle to recruit staff. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, said, "While unemployment remains close to historic lows, rising prices continue to eat into paychecks, which is why halving the inflation rate this year is one of our top economic priorities." Average wage growth in the public sector picked up to 5.3% on the year, the fastest annual rate since 2005, although continued to lag behind wage growth of 6.9% in the private sector. Paul Novak, the Trades Union Council General Secretary, said the figures showed workers were suffering the longest wage slump in modern history. Calling on ministers to resolve pay disputes, Paul Novak said, "Hard-pressed families can't take much more. It is no surprise that workers are having to take strike action to defend their standard of living."
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.